Okay, so we are going to be talking about the coming of the Mosaic Law today. So that's where we're at today on our road to redemption. We're going to be talking about the law. And if any of you are right now thinking about that song, "I Fought the Law and the Law Won," that is correct. That is correct. By the way, who sang that? Wow, that was quick. Now we know who was thinking about it. We knew exactly who was thinking about it. Thank you, Karen. I'm just curious this morning. How many of you have ever given instruction to someone without explaining why? Now, obviously, every parent in here immediately raises their hand because that's kind of what parents do. In fact, it's one of the things we're proudest of is we can say, "Because I said so." That's like, you know, and that's the thing I heard as a kid that I swore I'd never say, and I've said it 8,000 times because it makes me feel good. And I still like to do it. In fact, I just did it the other day on the phone to a kid 400 miles away. And I said, "Because I said so." Even though I have no enforcement power that far away. Well, actually, that's not true because I control the bank account. But you know, it's like we enjoy that. And sometimes it's irritating to hear when we're told that by somebody else. Somebody in authority says, "Do this." And you're like, "Why?" Don't worry about why. Just do it. So with that in mind, we're going to go back real quick this morning to the garden. Adam is told by God, even before he created Eve, he said, "Do not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because you're going to die." And he didn't give any other explanation. It's not why you're going to die, not what's going to happen to you, not how you're going to die, like you're going to fall down and have a terrible, painful death. He just, "Don't do it." And no other explanation, just don't do it. And that is very unsatisfying, I'm sure, for Adam. But Adam knows that. I'm sure he told Eve. They didn't listen. They ate of the fruit, and they died. Not immediately, but they died. So we're going to pick up this morning with the coming of the Mosaic Law, and we're going to start with a passage from Romans, oddly enough. Actually, three of our texts this morning are from Romans, because Paul talks a lot about the law. And so we're going to start in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 23. Now, the reason we're looking at this text, I want you to think, how many of you have ever thought about this? After Adam and Eve eat the fruit, what is good and evil? Now, the law is not given until Moses. So from Adam and Eve until Moses, what was right and wrong? Now that's an interesting. Some of you are going, "Well, Stuart, that is an exceptionally deep question." And you're correct, it is. Hopefully, I'll have a satisfactory answer before we're done this morning. But this is kind of an interesting thing, right? Because we're going to see later where Paul talks about the law is what identifies sin. So, in the absence of the law identifying sin, what was sin? So Paul kind of addresses this concept in Romans chapter 1. This is what he writes to the Roman church. He says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them." Verse 20, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." Now, I want you to think about that. In a world now where we have so many people go, "Well, there's no God. I don't believe there's a God." For thousands of years, what has every culture in the world, what conclusion have they come to? There's got to be a God. They may give that God different names. They may create numbers of gods to explain everything. But in all these cultures throughout history, people have come to the same conclusion. They look around at the universe as they understand it. And they go, "God." They see it everywhere. And so Paul says, this is how it's been from day one. His eternal power, his divine nature, they've been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they're without excuse, right? Next two verses, he says, "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man, and of birds, and four-footed animals, and crawling creatures. He says, what happened back then? Well, what they did is they looked at God, they recognized God, but they didn't respect him. They didn't respect him. I have a theory, and I want to be clear, this does not apply to everybody. I can't, because I have not had the pleasure of meeting every atheist in the world. So I can't speak. This is not universal. I can't say it applies to everybody, but I think it applies to a lot of people. I think a lot of people refuse to acknowledge there's a God because of the consequence of acknowledging there is one. Now, I want you to take a minute and think about this. And by the way, this really should hit home with some of us who claim to believe in God. If you believe that there's a God and he is the creator, then what does that mean? Well, if he created this universe, guess what he gets to do? He gets to make the rules, right? Just like those of you who used to look at your kids and go, as long as you live in my house, you live under my rules. Any of you ever get that speech? I got that speech a few times. When I used to look at my mother and go, making a bed is the stupidest thing in the history of the world. You sleep in it, you get up, you make it so that tonight I can tear the covers back off of it and climb back into it. That is a waste of time. Makes no sense. This was the explanation I got. And by the way, never was explained to me why it made sense to make a bed. Never. But this is what I got. My house, my bedroom, my bed. You want to sleep in it, make it. And there was anger behind those eyeballs. And so guess what I did? I made the bed. And I used to sit there and go, when I get my own house, I ain't making no bed. And my wife will testify that in the 26 years we've been married, I've never made one. Ever. If you go to my house, right, even if she makes her half, I'm going to go in and mess my half up. Just on principle. Okay. But if you recognize there's a God and you recognize he's the creator, then you have to recognize he has the authority to make the rules because he's God and it's his universe, and so he gets to make the rules. And if he's sovereign and he makes the rules and you recognize that, then what else do you recognize? That you should follow them, right? If there's a sovereign God who created the universe and he made rules as a person who he created, who lives in his universe, I should follow his rules. So if you don't want to follow the rules, what's the easiest thing to do? Just don't acknowledge he's there. By the way, as kids, how many of you ever walked out of a room and pretended you didn't hear your parents so you wouldn't have to do what they said? And it's like, why are you pretending you didn't hear it? Because it's easier to justify not listening if you pretend you didn't hear it, right? So if you just pretend that there's no, I don't believe there's a God, I refuse to acknowledge there's a God, because if there is a God, I have to listen to him, and I don't want to listen to him, so I'll just pretend he's not there. I'll just refuse to acknowledge his presence. And by the way, there's a lot of Christians who acknowledge he's there, but still don't listen to what he says. How fascinating is that? I acknowledge he's there. I acknowledge he's the creator. I acknowledge he made the rules. I just don't acknowledge I have to follow them. That is an exercise in stupidity, by the way. Just throw that out there. So you've got this situation where Paul says, if you look back in the period between Adam and Moses, you have all these people. And they know there's a God. They recognize there's a God, but they don't worship him. They don't honor him. In fact, what they do, they're going to make statues and idols of four-footed creatures and birds and crawling creatures. And they're going to worship those. They're going to worship these idols, and they're going to worship these false deities, because they don't want to worship the real God. And he said they don't have an excuse, because they knew better. They knew better. So this is kind of the world from Adam to Moses. And so now what, and by the way, this is the world in which the patriarchs lived. Abraham and Isaac and Jacob lived in this world where there was no Mosaic law for them to follow. So they had to kind of figure out what was right. Okay, and some things, you know, you just go innately, you just assume certain things are just wrong, right? Like murder, we just kind of innately know it's wrong to kill somebody. Most every culture in the world has laws against that kind of thing. You know, so there's certain things that we just innately know are wrong, and then there's certain things that we innately know, okay, that's right. And so Paul says that was how it was. So now that brings us to Moses. And so now we're gonna jump over to Exodus, the book of Exodus, chapter 19. And we're gonna get to where God is getting ready to give Moses the law. So he says, "Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant." Now, Jamie preached on covenant a couple weeks ago, that this relationship, this mutual agreement that is entered into, that I will be your people, you will be my people, I will be your God, and you're going to get this if you do this. And so this whole thing has been set up. And so now as they're coming out of Egypt, remember, God's covenant was first with who? Abraham. And then when Abraham died, the covenant passed to Isaac, and then when Isaac died, the covenant passed to Jacob. But you notice we don't have a recording of it passing for anyone after Jacob. And so now, as the children of Israel are coming out of Egypt, at Mount Sinai, God communicates this to Moses. He says, "Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, this covenant that I created with your ancestors, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. For these are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel." So I'm going to give you this law. I'm going to give you this law, Moses, and I want you to tell it to the children of Israel. And if they'll agree to keep it, then the covenant between us will continue. You will be my people, I will be your God, you will be a holy nation among all the peoples of the earth. All right, verse 7. "So Moses came and called the elders of the people and sat before them all the words which the Lord had commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, 'All that the Lord has spoken, we will do.'" Have any of you ever signed a contract that you didn't read the fine print? Any of you ever done that? By the way, anybody in this room that owns a house has done that. Because when they bring you the paperwork to buy your house, it's this thick. And if you've ever sat in there with a person who's getting you to sign the stuff, they just kind of flip through page and go, "Sign here." And you look at them and go, "What was on those pages?" "Don't worry about it. Just sign here." It's just legal jargon. I don't even read the cell phone agreement, right? So, you know, we've all done this. They're agreeing, they haven't even seen the law yet, but they're agreeing to, "Oh yes, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do." And Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. Okay, so now here's what's happened. The children of Israel have come out of Egypt, and God is now ready to give them the law. And why is he doing this? So they can be a holy and righteous people, right? But here's the problem. There is no righteousness in the law, because you can't follow the law. Now, one of the things, as I grew up in the church, and one of the things I just kind of always accepted, that the law was given to set the children of Israel apart so that they would be righteous. But Paul says there is no righteousness in the law because it's impossible for people to follow the law. In fact, there was no sin without the law. Paul says that. So that creates this really interesting question. Why now has God brought the law to the children of Israel? Now, let's go back to the original question. How many of you have ever told somebody to do something, not told them why? And how many of you have ever signed a contract without looking at it? The picture that in my mind is, because we're getting to that season, you know, remember the Santa Claus movie, Tim Allen, where he puts the suit on? Am I the only person here who's seen it? Okay, couple, Laura's seen it. Laura, you remember, I'll just do this with Laura then, because the rest of you clearly have not seen the movie. So he puts the suit on, and then when he gets to the North Pole, the little elf dude shows him the card, and he goes, "Did you read the card?" And all you see on the card is the Santa Claus. But then when they put it under the microscope, there's all this stuff, legal talk about if you put on the suit, you agree to be Santa Claus, what? So let me take you back to an interesting epiphany I had about this. What if the Mosaic Law was not written at Sinai? What if the Mosaic Law is just God's law and it's always been? And what if that's why God told them, don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Because if you do, you're going to be subject to the Santa Claus. You're going to be subject to the law. If you eat from this tree, you're going to be subject to my law. And my law is so holy and so righteous, you have zero chance of ever fulfilling it. And the penalty of sin is death. And so if you ever eat from that tree, you will be subject to my law. And you're going to die. Because you'll never be able to fulfill the law. And so what if what happens at Sinai is now God is ready to show the children of Israel the fine print that they are subject to because Adam and Eve ate from the tree? Well, that's interesting, isn't it? So now you've got this law, this code that's been put in place, and it's why has it activated? Well, it activated because Adam and Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so now, all right, now you know the difference. Except here's the problem. I've never read it to you. So what is good and evil for Adam and Eve and all the people up to Moses? Well, Paul says it was evident. God's nature is evident. But now at Sinai, God sits down and he tells Moses, here's what humanity signed up for when they broke my commandment in the garden. Here's the law, Moses. Now, how many of you have ever read Leviticus? That's funny. More people have read Leviticus than have seen the Santa Claus. I find that almost impossible to believe. But if you've ever read Leviticus, I mean, there's some crazy mess in there, right? I mean, it's not just, you know, we always go, Ten Commandments, right? Those make perfect sense. But it's the other stuff, right? The fabrics that you can wear. Some crazy stuff. It's like there's certain fabrics you can't wear. And I will not even get into the dietary restrictions. Because they lost me when they took pork off the menu. So you've got these insane dietary restrictions and these clothing restrictions, and there's the Sabbath, and there's the issue with blood, and if what happens if you kill someone, and I mean, there's rules on slavery. There's all sorts of stuff in there. It's a huge, massive document, and it's impossible to follow, which brings us to Paul's statements in Romans chapter 3. So we're going to look at verses 19 and 20. Now listen to what Paul says about the law to the Roman church. He says, now we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law. So that every mouth may be closed and all the world may become accountable to God. Now I want you to notice something here. Because one of the things that I kind of always just used to think was the Mosaic law only applied to the Jews, right? If you weren't a Jew, you weren't under the law, right? How many of you have always thought that? But did you notice what Paul says here? That's not what Paul says. He says it speaks to those who are under the law so that every mouth may be closed and all the world may become accountable to God. Everybody. Everybody's accountable to God. Well, what about the people who don't have the law? Well, here's the question. What difference does it make if you give somebody the law if they're not capable of fulfilling it? Right? So Paul says we're all accountable to God under the law. Because by the works of the law, now this is important, by the works of the law, no flesh will be justified in his sight. It doesn't say no Jew will be justified in his sight, right? It says no flesh. Nobody will be justified in his sight. For through the law comes what? The knowledge of sin. The knowledge of sin. And there's sin in there that was obvious. Thou shalt not kill. We knew that one. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And I think we feel like we probably should have known that one. Don't bear false witness. Don't lie. Yeah, those feel like we should have known those. Don't wear this fabric. Huh? Don't eat this food. What? Don't work on this day. Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that one. So now what you've got is you've got this humongous document that is impossible for any human to live under. And isn't it fascinating, the idea that maybe this is why God told Adam and Eve in the beginning, don't eat of the fruit. What you don't know won't hurt you. Any of you ever heard that phrase? What you don't know won't hurt you. Adam, Eve, I've got a law. I am righteous and I am a holy God and I have rules. And as long as you don't know what those rules are, you'll be fine. But if you eat of the knowledge of good and evil, if you eat of this tree and you become aware of right and wrong, you're dead. And you're not dead because the fruit killed you. You're going to die because sin's going to kill you, because none of you are capable of living in a world bound by my righteousness. Does that make sense? We cannot be righteous enough for God. We cannot follow his law. And so all this stuff is in place. So now all of a sudden, when Paul says this in Romans chapter 3, it makes so much more sense. Because over the years when I've read this, I'm like, well, why does he seems to be talking to Jews, but he doesn't specify this as Jews. And now it kind of makes sense, right? Because we're all under the law. Because this is God's righteousness we're talking about. And while he revealed it to the Jews, that doesn't mean we're not subject to the penalties of sin. And so now you've got all this stuff in place. And what God has done is he has communicated this to Moses and his people. For what purpose? Now, think about this. If you could be saved without Jesus, would you try? Now that's an interesting question, right? How many of you have ever known a way to do something, but you decided you wanted to find an easier way to do it? I'm gonna take a shortcut. Shortcuts have caused more divorces than maybe anything involved in driving. Hey, I'm gonna take this shortcut. That's not on the map. Don't worry, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Any of you ever heard your husband say that? Hey, I know what I'm doing. Those are famous last words. And by the way, if you say that to your wife in the car, you better be right. Because if you're not, that phrase will get repeated to you in a sarcastic tone. Mister, I know what I'm doing. Where are we now? Have you heard that one? All right. So sometimes when we're given an option, and by the way, I think there's a world full of people who have convinced themselves there's another way to be saved other than Jesus. I don't need Jesus. I'm going to find a different way. I'm going to find an easier path. You have this movement now. People say, oh, all roads lead to God. That's a lie. They don't. All roads lead to judgment, but they don't always lead to God. So we understand this, that there are always going to be those people trying to find a different path. And so imagine what happens with the Jews is we're going to create this law. And what this law is going to point out is that the only way you can be saved is with Christ. See, before the law, there were probably people who thought that righteousness could be found in themselves. Right? Well, I don't kill anybody. I don't steal. I don't covet. I don't do these things. I'm a reasonably good person. By the way, how many of you ever heard somebody say, well, I'm okay with God. I'm a good person. Okay, so let's be clear about this. Because of the law, no one in this room is good. Because of the law, none of you are good. Some of you may be better than others. Maybe the better phrase there is some of you are not as worse as others. Not as worse. Not as bad as others. I don't know. I'm going to go with not as worse just because it irritates Pam. Because the English teachers are there going, that's wrong. We're all sinners, right? The wage of sin is death. Paul says everybody falls short, right? We all sin and fall short. And so because of that, what does God do with the law? He gives it to Moses. He gives it to his people. And then he says, here's what I want you to see. You can't be righteous in my sight because this is the law that you brought down upon yourself when Adam and Eve disobeyed me. This is the hammer that dropped on you when you disobeyed me in the garden. My righteous law fell on your shoulders. Now, if some of you think you might be overstating that, let's go to Romans 7. This is where we're gonna finish up this morning, Romans chapter 7. Paul said, I once was alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin became alive and I died. I died. Wages of sin are death. And so when I became aware of the law, it killed me. I died. And the commandment which was to result in life proved to result in death for me. For sin, taking an opportunity through the commandment, deceived me and through it killed me. So then, the law is holy and the commandment is holy and righteous and good. But what am I? I'm dead. And why am I dead? Because the wages of sin is death. We talked about this last week, so I want to make sure I kind of tie this in. So last week we talked about blood, right? We talked about the penalty for death could only be paid in blood. That's what we talked about last week, the idea that because the wages of sin is death, we talked about the Passover and how the blood of the lamb is what prevented judgment from coming on the people in Egypt, the children of Israel. Okay, we talked about how that plague passed over them because of the blood. So now, this week, we're getting the law. And the law says, guess what? You're all guilty. Now, some of you may be sitting here going, yeah, but Stuart, I'm a pretty good person. And I won't debate that. Some of you are really good people. Some of you. Some of us. It's always us and them, right? But here's the problem. How much sin does it take to kill you? One. Just one. Just one. One sin means you violated the law. And because you violated the law, you're dead. That's what Paul says. Can we go back one slide, please? Paul says, I was once alive. Where was I alive? Apart from the law. When I didn't know what sin was. Maybe he's talking about when he was a child. You know, when I didn't know the law, I was innocent. I didn't know right and wrong. I was alive then. But when the commandment came, when the law came, what happened? Sin became alive, and immediately what happened to me? I died because I committed sin. The commandment which was to result in life actually proved to result in death for me. So he says that's the nature of the law. And so because of the law, because of sin, what's going to happen? It doesn't matter how good you are. You know, the person who commits 10 sins in their life faces the same punishment as the person that commits 100, right? Because the wage of any sin is death, all sin is death, and so because we're all sinners, we're all going to die. Well, that's really morbid, isn't it? It's a sad thought. We're all doomed. Is that how that works? But this is why the law is so important as we understand the concept of the road to redemption. And by the way, it's why it was so important that Jesus lived his entire life on earth never violating the law. And why could he do that? Because he was God. Because God is holy, God is righteous, Christ was God incarnate, and so he was righteous, so he could fulfill this law. And then what could he do? He could become our Passover. But this is why the coming of the law is so important. And a lot of times, you know, I think a lot of times we look back at the Old Testament and go, Old Testament, we're a New Testament church. That's really not that important. I've told people over the years that, and by the way, this is proof positive that we learn as we get older. You never stop learning. I've said 100 times probably to people, well, if you're not Jewish, you're not under the law. That's just always what I thought. I'm not sure I believe that anymore. I think the law was given to the Israelites, but all mankind was subject to it. Because the law is how we define sin. The law is what dropped on humanity when Adam and Eve ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden. And so in the context that the sin brings death, we are subject to the law. Now, we're not subject to the law if what? If we're Christians, right? Because the blood of Christ now moves us away from the law. But otherwise, we're just like everybody else, right? And so we've got this circumstance where the law was given to let everybody know, this is just how bad you messed up. Imagine being told to do something by a parent, and that parent doesn't tell you why. They just said, don't do this. Don't do this. Okay. And then as soon as they're gone, you say, well, that doesn't make sense to me, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what they told me not to do because it doesn't make sense to me. And then the parent comes home, finds out you have violated what they told you, and then you begin over time to understand just how badly you messed up. That thing that you were told to do didn't make sense to you at the time, but now that you violated it, and now you start to understand the consequences of it, and you realize, oh my gosh. Any of you ever had this? Somebody comes and says, I want to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody. By the way, let me just go ahead and tell you, if somebody starts with that line, that means they've already been told not to tell anybody. Okay? So already you're in trouble. But somebody comes and says, I want to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody. And you go, okay, and then they tell you, and then what do you immediately do? You tell somebody, but at least you give them the same tagline. I want to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody. How many people do you think have been permanently hurt by gossip? Something got out about them, true or not, doesn't even matter, but something got out about them, and when it got out, man, and by the way, in the era of social media, boy, once something's out there, it's out there. I mean, just ask yourself a question. Have you ever done something unintentionally that caused somebody harm that at the time you did it, you didn't really think it was going to hurt anybody? I would guess every one of us has at some point. We've done that. We've done that. I had a friend one time who was told that someone had passed away, and he was a minister, and he had been told somebody passed away, but they said, but don't tell anybody because all the family doesn't know yet. We'll let you know when it's okay. Well, the next day, he figured, oh, well, it must have been long enough by now. So he shared it. And it got to the family, some of the family who had not heard yet, before it was supposed to. He wasn't trying to hurt anybody. He wasn't trying to do anything bad to anybody. He was just trying to get the information out. He, in his head, well, it had been enough time. But nobody had told him it was okay to do it yet. You can't undo that, right? You can't undo that kind of thing. So we all understand this. If you went back to Adam and Eve, if you got a chance to talk to them and you said, did you have any idea what you were unleashing on humanity when you ate the fruit? What do you suppose Adam and Eve would say? Nah, man, if we had known, if God had just told us, if he had just said, don't eat of the fruit, because if you do, I'm going to drop this on you, and showed them the law. Here it is. Here's everything that's going to happen. Here's everything you're going to have to follow. Read all of it. If Adam and Eve had had a copy of the law and had read it, assuming they could read, if they had read it and then went, don't ever eat that. Don't ever touch that. If you eat that, we have to get dressed. That alone would be enough, right? We're going to have to make clothes. And I'm never going to be able to eat bacon again. Don't touch the fruit. Is that the worst trade in history? Fruit for bacon? Worst trade ever. Am I right? Monty's with me on that. He's like, why would you ever trade fruit for bacon? I mean, if Adam and Eve had known the full extent of the law, I don't think they would have eaten that fruit. Do you? I don't think so. But here's the problem. God didn't have to tell them why, because he was God. All he had to do is tell them. And that is this very same rule that applies to us. God didn't have to explain every little thing to you. He's given you things that you're supposed to do and things you're not supposed to do, and they're clearly written in his word, and he says, I don't need to explain it to you, just don't do it. And you don't need to understand why, just don't do it. And why? Because I don't have to explain it, I'm God. Here it is, just do it. Just do these things, don't do these things, not complicated. Adam and Eve were given one very simple instruction, don't eat of this fruit. And for thousands of years, mankind has lived with the consequences of their failure to obey God. And one day, Moses and the children of Israel were given an explanation of the full penalty that mankind incurred because Adam and Eve didn't listen. Here's the law. Here's God's law, guys. Here it is. Now you need to live this. And they couldn't do it. I'm going to ask the praise team to come and lead us in our communion song this morning. And as we get ready to partake together, I want you to be mindful that you are not subject and bound to the law that dropped on humanity when Adam and Eve ate that fruit. And the reason you're not is because Christ has freed you from that. He didn't have to, but he did. And this table represents the sacrifice that he made to free you from the law that you could never follow. Be mindful of that sacrifice as we prepare to sing together this morning.